Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
And I never would have probably tried Spam if it weren't for my dad.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Look at the meaty thighs on this Italian player.
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I was freaking brothers every way like MJ.
Zardoz.
How dare you, Luis Valbuena's a national treasure.
I'm a pepper jack guy.
Well, I most definitely have a throbbing Corey Kluboner.
So you're delicious and sticky.
We're going to have a joke about this later because, Nate, you did the big feet thing from Anchorman.
Yes.
So
that is true.
Do you guys do that before you record? Do you, do the how now, brown cow, how now, brown cow, the exercises to get yourself prepared and ready?
I often flap my lips like a horse. I do some light calisthenics, some jogging, some jumping jacks, some push-ups.
Good.
You know, get the blood.
I do some burpees. I consume mass quantities of coffee. I do some light meditation.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
The only thing I
do
really
heavy meditation as well.
Heavy meditation, which sounds like a Sammy Hagar song. The only thing I really do is I sing that 80s song, which really played into it, Don't Pay the Ferryman. And this is no joke. I will sing this nearly every time before I record.
Well, sing it now because I don't know that the name of that song.
What band sings that?
Oh, it's like a one-hit wonder, some Phil Collins ripoff, whatever. But it's in the night we go, and he just, and I don't even know the words, so I just and then I do that. But then the chorus goes, "Don't pay the ferryman, don't even fix a price," and I'll do that every time.
And it does it just come to your head?
Yes,
like naturally.
Like I'm the only person who remembers this song.
It is a man named Chris DeBerg.
There you go. I didn't even know it. But yeah, one-hit wonder, weird 80s song, and it's just basically that old hokey expression that he turned into a song.
I always, at all hours, minutes, and seconds of the day, I don't know how it hasn't driven me completely insane yet, but at all times, I have in my head Kermit singing Rubber Ducky.
Kermit? Wait, no.
Yeah.
Not Kermit. Ernie.
Yeah.
That's Bert.
Well,
Ernie.
In my head, it's Kermit singing it.
Wow. So you're even more messed up. You're not even you're doing the
you're
cover
customizing
version.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're customizing it.
Yeah, I am part psychopath for sure.
Rubber ducky.
And I'll walk around the house whistling it all the time, and my wife just shakes her head at me all the time, like, what the hell is wrong with you?
Well, I'm going to assume that she has purchased several ferrets since a week has passed.
No, never shall a ferret enter these hallowed halls of the Dokken household. Episode 143, everybody. Outfielders outside of the top 40. We will welcome to the show very shortly the mighty Vlad Sedler. And, man, he is definitely just an all-around great dude. Very well-spoken. Freaking as smart as anyone in the fantasy baseball realm, and I'm really happy with the knowledge that he brought to the table. I don't know about you guys.
Absolutely. Fun guy. Smoothest voice. Like, I wish I had that kind of a voice.
Like butter.
Yeah. No, people, and I never understood this because I hate my voice because everyone does, but people are always like, yo, you've got a radio voice. I'm like, no, I sound like an idiot. I don't know what you're talking about, but I wish I had that guy's voice. Also, last thing I'll say, again, this is Van here since Nate introduced me this week. This is the first time on the NastyCast that the letter V has been the prominent host letter, so that's certainly important in the grand scheme of things.
That is true. Which name is better, Ron Rigney, Van or Vlad?
Could you combine them and like make a hybrid, like
Vlan?
Vlan, yeah.
Vlan?
That sounds like a Mexican dessert.
That'd be good. Essentially, the way that you described Vlad, which I agree with everything, I think it was awesome outfield preview we did there. But I think with, everything that you said and everything he's got going for him, which I totally agree with, he definitely does not belong on the Nasty Cast, that's for sure.
Yeah, he
belongs on the Smooth Cast.
Sure. Yeah.
The Smooth Cast. Yeah.
Smooth Cast. That's actually what they used to use to describe Garrett Anderson. Rex Hudler would do this because he was the Angels announcer for a while. He'd go, listen, Hud, there aren't enough O's in smooth to describe Garrett's swing. And I'm not exaggerating.
That's awesome.
Excellent.
There you
it was
go,
like so. A good Rex Hudler reference, no matter what it's if, whether it's announcer or playing days. It's always a solid reference whenever you can bring him up. It's almost as solid as Casey Kochman.
Oh, hey. Bringing him back. Yes, all right. Once again, what are your thoughts on Casey Kochman? Tweet us at NastyCastBGFS. Of course, Vlad can be reached at RotoGut. Easily the best Twitter handle amongst us. I am Nathan Dokken. You can find me at Nathan Dokken. Van is at Manly Van Lee, and Ron is at The Real Made. And if you are listening to us and you enjoy the show, please take a moment to give us a positive rating and review on iTunes or wherever the hell you listen to us. It makes us really happy, and it actually might get us some more listeners if we actually show up higher in the search return, you know, whatever you get there. Patreon. You can also donate to our Patreon if you want to support the show, patreon.com/nastypod. And if you do that, you get yourself a free copy of the 2018 Nasty Draft Guide. You also get early access to some bonus positional preview podcasts that we'll be pumping out shortly. And also listen to Fantrax Dynasty Baseball. It is this group of wonderful gentlemen talking strictly about Dynasty Baseball. And that is on its own feed now, so you can listen to it by itself if you didn't like the other Fantrax podcasts on the Fantrax radio feed. And also Fantrax HQ. That's a thing now on its own. Pretty sweet.
Yeah, looks very nice.
I was checking it out today. It looks amazing.
Cleaned it up a bit. We got some new new names. Al Melchior joined us. Joe Pisapia, who's been on the show this year already. Of course, Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver, whom I also do the Launch Angle podcast with. Just a little bit of a plug there on my behalf. But anyway, some good names. We've got good people. Fantrax is
huge
growing.
Huge names. Oh, yeah. This is a huge step forward. We're not just a blog anymore. It's like it's the full-fledged analysis site. And it's if you haven't checked it out, you need to, because it's not only us, but some of the finest names in the industry over at Fantrax HQ now.
Think of it as we kind of like form together like Voltron, everybody that has something to do over there.
A little bit. Now, I would be like the big toe on this Voltron, because like those guys are really important.
Yeah.
And then there's like me over here like, boo, I make fart noises on podcasts.
Well, see, that would make me like the little toenail, because I don't even do half of what you guys do. And so but just to be part of it's cool.
We're the best toe there is.
Is that like Power Rangers then?
You don't know Voltron?
I'm not too familiar with Voltron? No, not really.
It's like the robots that all form into one.
Yeah.
And like one's a cougar.
Well, the Power Rangers did that too.
They did, yeah.
But with Voltron, like the robots were like the actual appendages though.
Right, yeah, because, Power Rangers kind of did that because they had their own things, and then they could form an Ultra thing, which was them all mushed together.
Yeah, that's true.
My first love was the Pink Power Ranger.
I could go with
that. Back when I was like 6 years old. I actually went back and like searched for them a while back just to see if I can confirm whether I was on the right track, and I totally was.
Nice.
She was smoking hot back then.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. What's up, Kimberly? You're the one for me.
Think we could have her on the podcast sometime?
God, I hope so. I'm gonna reach out to her. We'll get her next week. We might have to bump Al.
He would understand, though. I think he would.
I think so.
I mean, I would.
He's like, whoa, you got the Pink Power Ranger, dude. Yeah,
totally
I'll come
cool.
Back later.
Oh, no.
All right, so let's get some plugs out of the way quickly. Van, did you get everything out of the way? Or
mostly also write for Fantrax, of course. I just put out a couple articles about prospects who lost value in 2017. I did pitching 2 weeks ago and a couple hitters this week. I'm really blanking on names. Nick Gordon was one of them. He lost about 30 spots on the top 100 despite actually having a pretty good year in the minors. But I think you touched on that when we did our Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast about the twin system, where simply having Royce Lewis on the team kind of knocks down Nick Gordon's value a little bit, just because Lewis is that good. Other than that, again, check out the Launch Angle podcast. We just recorded our third episode and put it up Wednesday. So yeah, take a look. Or listen, I guess. I'm bad at that.
Go.
I always say
no. Look and listen. Do both. Safety first, everybody. before we get to you, Ron, you have something else that you wanted to talk about too, so I'll just get my plugs out of the way real quick. It is that time of the year where I am becoming nearly ubiquitous. So in addition to this podcast and the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast, I also joined Bubba on the Bench with Bubba podcast. You can listen to that. We talk about the Twins and went in depth to the shortstop position, so check that out. He also does a ton of great DFS stuff, and just he's pumping out a ton of podcasts. So go check out that the Bench with Bubba podcast. Also joined Al Melchior yesterday on his the fantasy sports show, and you can check out that in podcast form if you missed it live. And that's the Fantrax or Fan Reg radio feed or podcast feed, whatever they call it. And then also this Sunday, you'll be able to hear me on Sirius XM on the Rotoballer radio with those guys. And that is in addition, of course, to my Razzball right work. You can check me out there. And then I'll be starting on Fantrax my Dudes and Don'ts series this week, which is my sleepers and busts. So you can check that out there. So good luck avoiding me, everybody. I'm freaking everywhere. So with that, Ron, I'll turn it over to you for your plugs and anything else that you have to say.
Yeah, real quick, just what I've got going on is we started Fantistics, just kind of doing some previews over there, and I'm going to post my second one tonight covering a few teams and then just covering some stuff that happened in baseball this week, how it affects some guys that were traded and some guys that were left behind after some trades. So check me out over there. I'll be doing some stuff at Big Guy Fantasy Sports as well. Might be looking at a few of the sabermetric stats over there. And some guys, maybe I'm going to start doing something called the dollar bin, and I'm looking at some auction values of some guys you can get later in your auction for maybe a buck or two that might chip in a little bit later on, and especially in some deeper leagues. One thing I want to take a minute to do, and I appreciate you guys for allowing me to do this, and I want to say up front, I think one of the great things about what we can do on this podcast and what we can do with fantasy baseball is it kind of gives us an escape from what we deal with every day in the real world. And I know we try not to get too political. We try not to be serious all the time. And I think that that's one of the things that we have going for us, is we can give people that escape. And for us to be able to do that, I think is huge. And I'm very blessed to be a part of it. That said, I wanted to bring this up real quick, just as kind of a reminder of a couple of things about life. So I'm going to kind of hijack the show here for a minute and get a little bit more serious. I had a buddy of mine over the weekend, that guy that's from my small little town in Indiana, actually relocated to St. Petersburg about 12 years ago. Guy that I've known for over 30 years, fellow huge Rays fan as well. Just kind of a reminder of the preciousness of life and how things that you choose to do can affect people that you had no idea that you would have an impact on. One of my buddies, Pete Chenal, was having a night out with some friends, walking down a sidewalk in St. Petersburg, and he actually had a drunk driver hop the curb and basically run him down, and he is no longer with us. And so with that said, it's just, you know, it's one of those things that it's your choice to do what you want to do. It's your choice to make a poor decision as to get in a car and drive when you have been drinking. And the thing that you need to understand is that it can be prevented. Number one, my friend should still be here. But number two, you know, your decisions can affect and alter the lives of people in ways that you could never imagine. And so this person has, you know, taken away a child's father, taken away a son, taken away a brother, and taken away a friend of a lot of people. One of the best people that I've known. Definitely one of those people that you meet in your lifetime that's an original. When they say, you know, they broke the mold when they made such and such, he's definitely one of those guys. Just always one of those guys, too, that you could not see for 2-3 years and pick up like you never left off. And so, you know, one of the things I also know as well is that and Van, you might want to get your bleep button ready for this. You might want to mark this down. But I one of the things I do on the side here is I drive for a Lyft. And one of the things I've gotten to know about Lyft is it's not very expensive. And so at the end of the day, I know, you get preached to your whole life about the ills of drinking and driving, even, you know, when they start in middle school with the slogans and the sayings, and they tell you all the ills of it, you know. But at the end of the day, I know that Uber and Lyft are not expensive. I don't know why people don't choose to use them. They're everywhere. So at the end of the day, I guess the end of my message is here. Don't drink. Don't get in a car and drive. If you do, get a ride. Call somebody. Call Lyft. Call Uber. Call a cab. Do what you got to do. It's not that expensive. It's not that big of a pain in the ass to go get your car the next day. Because if that would have happened, my friend would still be here. So done. Said my piece. Rest in peace, Pete Chenal.
Sad story, yeah. And it's worth noting that also, if you do happen to choose Lyft, you might get Ron or me as a driver.
Yes.
And that could make your day far better than it ever would have been.
Absolutely.
There you go, yes. And I'm not too proud to admit that I've made that mistake myself. I've you know, driven and drove. And that was before the days of, you know, Lyft and Uber and all that. And I would never do that again. It's, you know, it's so easy. Like you said, it's inexpensive. It's so easy to avoid doing that. Use your head. Yeah, I say it all the time. Safety first as a sort of a joke. But I mean, it's really, really true. So make sure that you're making the smart decision when you're out, you know, enjoying the beverages and so on. So on that note, we'll take a break here. Come back on the other side with Vlad Sedler.
Nasties.
All right, and joining us now on the Nasty Cast from RotoWire, Guru Elite as well. He is the DFS guru and Baseball HQ, the dapper Vlad Sedler. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
What's up, gentlemen? It is great to be on with you guys. Ready to talk some baseball.
Yeah, getting some new blood on the Nasty Cast. I don't know how we haven't had you on before, but I'm very glad that you agreed to come on the show and share your elite baseball, fantasy baseball skills with us today. I'm very excited to go over this stuff. And, man, we have a lot to get to, so let's dive right into the news. The entire offseason decided to happen over the course of the last week, so we have more news in this episode to pack into than probably all of the other podcasts we've done in the offseason combined. So we'll start off with Eric Hosmer, who has signed with the Padres. 8 years, $144 million he gets. So, Vlad, we'll throw it to you first. What do you think this does for the value of Eric Hosmer?
You know, it's interesting. I'm always looking for some sort of angle where, you know, you've got everybody talking about what a bad deal it is, so many years and all this. And I'm looking for the silver lining. And the more I dig in, I'm not sure what type of lining I'll find outside of him probably looking good in a Padres uniform. But yeah, I think 8 years is just too many. He'll be 36, 37 at the end of the contract. You know, on the bright side, he's one of the league's most solid and patient hitters. 16% career walk rate. Strikeout rate. Hit 318 last year, 297 a couple years prior. And then MLB park factor wise, I mean, this is a guy that's moving to a park in Petco that's not only, you know, equally bad for hitters compared to Kauffman, but actually a little worse, ranking 29th in park factor in terms of runs and home runs. And so, yeah, I mean, I think in general, you know, this lineup, looking at this Padres lineup, it's pretty much going to be short on talent outside of, you know, Myers and maybe Manny Margot. So I think we might see a little bit of drop off in production. As far as fantasy is concerned, I'm probably going to expect a little bit of a downturn in most of his stats across the board, maybe a bump in steals because I do think the Padres are going to run a little bit more. But overall, in fantasy, like unless he falls way past his ADP, you know, and I really need a first baseman with some average, just really not somebody I'm targeting this year.
Yeah, and you know, everybody knows that I am not a Hosmer fan, and I have not been a Hosmer fan for a while. I do think a lot of the projection stuff has him hitting at least 285. So this day and age, at least the batting average you're going to get is valuable. However, as I've said before, this is a guy that needs 650 plate appearances to hit 25 home runs. And this is an era of baseball where everybody hits 25 home runs. So if he has one injury and suddenly gets 580 plate appearances, he's down to 20, 22 home runs. And you're just not getting the value out of your first baseman that you could elsewhere. So it's a guy I'm going to avoid. I did, however, say on Twitter the other day that I didn't hate this contract. And the reason being is I think just because I'm so used to these, you know, massive $200 million contracts that paying Hosmer $20 million a year isn't really as bad as it feels like it is. I don't know if that makes sense. So, I mean, really, it doesn't make sense because the Padres aren't going to compete for a couple more years, though they believe Hosmer will help them compete in a few years. I don't even know if they do that because they tend to do really stupid things and haven't had a competitive window in forever. So I don't know if I trust the logic of them signing him. As a fantasy player, I'm still going to avoid him just like I have been all year. And it just doesn't interest me overall in the long run.
I don't think overall that it changes a lot as far as offensive production you're going to expect. I think, you know, like you said, Van, it's 600 plate appearances for 25 home runs, but he is durable. He's played 158 games at least the last 3 years. And I think that it's a matter of, you know, if you're going to draft him, you guys know I'm a little bit higher on Hosmer than you guys are. And I think it's because of, I like where you can get him later on as maybe as your corner infielder, your utility, or your DH. I don't necessarily want him as my starter if I can help it. But if I can get around that, then I'm definitely in on getting him later on. I think, like I said last year in my auction, I got him for like $6. So if I can get him for $6 and I can plug him in as my corner infield, if I can get that, you know, that 300 average, if I can get 25 homers, approach 100 RBI and maybe get 10 steals out of him, I think that's pretty solid value for where you're going to get him. But you have to get him at that value.
Yeah, I've never been a huge Hosmer guy myself. I was debating him when I was on with the Rotoballer guys, and that Rafael Rabe, he's always been a Hosmer guy, and I was kind of poo-pooing drafting him. And, you know, he pointed out that he has been very, very consistent over the last couple of years, which you can't argue with, but just doesn't provide the home run pop that I'm looking for at first base. And so I'm going to continue to probably just overlook Eric Hosmer. And I don't see a huge value shift for Hosmer. But it's definitely not enough to entice me to be drafting him this year by any means. So let's move on to a potentially more exciting signing. It's JD Martinez, who signed with the Red Sox, 5 years, $110 million, considerably smaller contract, which might raise an eyebrow. So what did you think about this, Vlad, and what do you think this does for the value of JD Martinez?
I mean, it's a good deal. I think he's one of the best power hitters in baseball right now. You know, really, really nice fit. And, you know, JD Martinez, he is basically a guy that's a sneaky first round value that you're getting at a second round price. And I actually did my first 12 team online on Tuesday night. And it was the first draft since he had signed, and you're already seeing his ADP jump. He ended up going 14th in that draft, ahead of Goldschmidt and Chris Bryant and Freddie Freeman. But yeah, I mean, he had an insane season last year, 45 homers and 481 plate appearances, you know, league's best pace per plate appearance. Obviously that Chase Field really helped sort of, accentuate things for him a little bit on the power wise. But yeah, this year, lots of scoring opportunities, especially with Betts and Benintendi in front of him in the lineup. I know they're talking about batting Hanley third ahead of JD Martinez, but, we'll see how that shakes out. And then just one last little interesting tidbit that I posted, because I remember playing JD in a DFS a lot last year when you had a lefty on the mound. So, you know, last year against Southpaw pitchers, he and Arenado are the only two players with a weighted on base average, a WOBA over 500 against lefties last year.
Whoa, that's insane. That is crazy high. Yeah, and he's been nothing but good over the last couple of years. I was very skeptical back in, 2014 when the spike happened when he got traded to Detroit. And he's done nothing but made me look like an idiot since. So it's a good deal for him simply because he's going to get a really high average annual value for the next couple of years with a few opt-out clauses in this contract. And he's going to get to hit in Boston, which with that stupid fence in left field, sorry if I'm going to offend anyone out there because they're all in the old school of Boston, but I hate that stupid fence because it's 200 feet from home plate. Anyway, in that short right field porch, I mean, I think he's going to continue hitting at a really torrid pace. I definitely like the deal for the Red Sox. I think Dave Dombrowski kind of won out here because he just waited and waited and waited and didn't end up overspending for Martinez, and a five-year deal on a player of his caliber, even if he stays the last 2 years and doesn't quite hit as well as this, I think you're still going to get your value out of it.
I definitely like this deal. And I don't hate the Hosmer deal, but I definitely like this one a little bit more. I like the years a little bit better. And Van, like you said, I like the fact that they waited it out and kind of got made it feel like they got a win as an organization. And when you look at the lineup too as well, he's going to hit fourth in that lineup most likely. He's got a couple of nice table setters in front of him, Mookie Betts, Benintendi. And then I think the one thing you can't overlook besides Martinez, because he's going to get his numbers and he's one of the, you know, he's a solid hitter. You know, like Vlad said, he's one of the best power hitters in the game. And that WOBA is insane crazy. I like Rafael Devers hitting behind him as well. I think that might affect him a little bit also. So you got to look at it from that standpoint as well. But I think it's a great deal for both sides. I think it was just a foregone conclusion. It was going to happen. It was just who was going to blink first. And so it ended up Boston winning out. But I think for both sides, great deal. Fantasy-wise, I don't think it really impacts anything. I think he's still going to get his numbers as long as he's healthy.
Are they really talking about putting Hanley in front of him?
They are, sure. Yes. Yeah. Did Corus come out and say that today, I think it was? He said he's committed to Hanley hitting in the three hole, which is absurd.
Let's get out of here with that. Come on, put J.D. Martinez in a three hole. Are you kidding me? Yeah, like you said, behind Mookie and Benintendi, that is a fearsome 1-2-3. I love it right there. And I've got J.D. Martinez in all my dynasty leagues, and I've professed my love for him many times on this show, so I don't have a whole lot more to say. I'm kind of worried about that green monster maybe stealing a few home runs, but that'll probably just turn him into doubles anyway, so maybe not the hugest loss in the world. All told, it's going to be a pretty nice lineup, so I am very satisfied with the fact that he will be in the AL East. But we're going to stick with the Red Sox and go to the Eduardo Nunez signing, who has gone back to the Red Sox on a two-year deal. So, Vlad, what do you think this does for the value of Eduardo Nunez?
Obviously would love to see him on a team where he is, getting a chance to hit in the top third of the lineup, hitting first or second. But it looks like at the moment he's going to cover second base while Pedroia is out. Very flexible guy. He's great in terms of being multi-eligible, particularly in the NFBC, where you can plug him in the outfield, second base, or third. And, with stolen bases going to come at a premium this year, this is one of those guys. I mean, 24 stolen bases in 114 games last year, 40 stolen bases the year before playing for the Twins, and has a little bit of pop, too. And so, I think the one issue with him really is just a guy that isn't necessarily really good with getting on base in terms of taking a walk. You're kind of paying full price for him at 130 overall right now in his ADP. But, overall, I like the signing. If I'm in a position where I need stolen bases right there around the 9th, 10th round, he's somebody I definitely consider.
Yeah, and, I'm kind of, I guess, wary is what I would say going to the Red Sox, just because they signed him in essence to fill in for Pedroia, and then when Pedroia comes back, shift him around the infield. So I'm kind of afraid he doesn't get full-time at-bats. More often than not, when that happens, if he's the one that's healthy, he'll get the full-time at-bats because somebody else is going to get hurt or, just fatigue and ineffectiveness. But it's been no secret that I really do like him this year. It's a later pick, kind of in those mid rounds, that can get you those stolen bases. And if it's an OBP league, if he does struggle with the batting average, that might hurt you a little bit. But if it's a batting average league, you're going to get a huge benefit there because he's a guy who does hit for average. Despite the fact that the first part of his career was absolutely worthless, and somehow he just decided to be really good once the Twins traded him away for the most part. So, yeah.
That happens a lot.
Aaron Hicks, fingers crossed.
Dude, that list is much longer than that. Well, just, yeah. Don't get me started. Go ahead, Ron. Right. I didn't mean to interrupt.
the thing about it is, too, and Vlad kind of alluded to it as well. I'm looking at the depth chart here, the batting order projected on roster resource, and you've got him hitting ninth. I'd love to see him, a little higher up in the lineup, especially, hitting in front of those the bigger boppers in the lineup. And I agree 100% with what we said earlier about Hanley Ramirez. You need to drop him down in the lineup or maybe get rid of him altogether. But hitting ninth, I'm not as high on him as I would be if he was moved up a little bit. But, we could see some movement here a little bit in spring training. They could be tinkering with it a little bit. And I think Vlad alluded to it as well with the multi-position eligibility. That's huge, especially from a guy that you can get all those steals from, and especially a guy that can give you those steals but can also hit you 15 to 18, possibly even 20 home runs. So I think it's a great signing for them, and I think it just makes a already potent lineup even better.
It's a great signing for the Red Sox, but as far as I'm concerned, this tanks his value because what's he going to do once Dustin Pedroia gets back? And he's eyeing opening day. So even if he doesn't make that, what's he going to miss? 2 weeks? Is he going to miss a month? That's all the amount of time that you're going to get regular at-bats out of Eduardo Nunez. And, it is nice that he is flexible. You can move him around for fantasy purposes. And obviously the Red Sox are going to try and do that too. They're going to shift him all over the place, try and find him at-bats. But if I'm drafting a guy on Fantrax, his ADP is 140 overall right now, I don't want to worry about a guy, maybe playing three or four games a week. A month into the season for the rest of the year. And so for that reason, I'm taking Eduardo Nunez. I'm not going to be drafting him anywhere. You would have to shift him down. And I was on the Bench with Bubba podcast earlier this week, and I said that I would probably bump him down like 100 picks, to be honest. And maybe that's an overreaction, but if you're going down to like 240, you know, you've still got guys like Aaron Hicks who are going there, who I really like, or Jackie Bradley Jr., guys who you are guaranteed a little bit more playing time. And so I'm just not going to screw around with Eduardo Nunez. And maybe his ADP drops quite a bit now with the signing. But if it doesn't, I am all the way out on him.
One thing I want to point out, by the way, is I saw a little bit of your interview on that Bench with Bubba podcast. And what I saw
it. It was a podcast.
I saw the video now because there's a video feed. And what it is it's his webcam. So it's him speaking, talking, doing normal. Then when you speak, the way Skype works is your picture comes up over his, and it's literally just that picture of you with the sombrero on. So it's just every now and then it's him talking, and then boom, sombrero Nate for a few minutes, and then it just goes right back.
Well, that's a good experience, at least.
I enjoyed it.
I'm glad you could associate my face with the hatred of Eduardo Nunez. But speaking of hatred, God, I'm good at transitions. We're going to move into this is going to enrage Ron over here, our resident Ray fan. Yeah, I made the joke. I'm sorry. So we've got a whole bunch. The Rays decided to, they decided to make some moves this week. And so what we're going to do in the essence of time is just combine all of these acquisitions. I might actually just give Ron the floor after this as the resident Rays fan to get his take. But so first of all, the Rays acquired CJ Cron from the Angels and mysteriously DFA'd Corey Dickerson. Sorry, Yancey Eaton. C-Dick, his boy. That sucks for him. I felt so bad for him, honestly. But anyway, then they decided to trade Jake Odorizzi to my Twins for somebody named Jermaine Palacios. So that was fun. And then they also traded Steven Souza to the Diamondbacks. And then the Diamondbacks sent Drury to the Yankees. And the Rays, in return, got Anthony Banda. And then, again today, the Rays also signed Carlos Gomez to a one-year deal. So, Vlad, I'm going to short shrift you on this. I'm just going to send this over to Ron. As a Rays fan, what are you feeling right now?
Oh, sorry. I was over in the corner in the fetal position, kind of just crying. we've talked about this before. As a Rays fan, you know the MO. You know how they do things. You know how it works. But in all the years I've been a Rays fan, and I mean, you know, the Longo move came earlier in the season, and we've seen that one coming as Rays fans for a couple of years. You know that's how it works. You saw it with David Price. You see it with all the guys that they bring up, and then they deal for more prospects. And I get it. But I don't remember a time where they've done this much of a fire sale all at one time just to get rid of everybody. I'm not saying I don't like some of the prospects they got back, but for what they're giving up, the value they're getting back, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that Jake Odorizzi is going to win a Cy Young anytime soon, but you're giving him up for a low A guy that is just kind of a guy that does a few things okay, not really great at any one thing. Not really sure if that's the best value they could have got for him. And Nate, kind of like you pointed out the other day, is why are they waiting to this point to hold out to get that? I'm not really sure what that's about. I'm not really sure what they're doing with Corey Dickerson. Steven Souza, I read today, it was more of a instance of the Diamondbacks kind of pursuing him as a fallback if they didn't get J.D. Martinez, which I don't disagree with. I'm sure that's what it was. But still, and I don't mind the return they got back for that so much either, Anthony Banda. And the other name escapes me now, Slowacker, I think, or something like that. The 10th ranked prospect in their system, which isn't really all that strong of a system anyway. But like I said, overall, it sucks as a, I mean, you see, I understand it as from a baseball standpoint, it makes sense for what they do because they make no money. I don't know. But what I don't understand is how they're going to justify trying to get a new stadium when they're platooning CJ Cron and Brad Miller at first base. Their outfield is going to consist of Malik Smith, Denard Span, and the newly acquired $4 million Carlos Gomez. I really don't understand. So I guess, like I said, I don't know if they're planning on bringing a lot of the Brent Honeywells of the world up and the Willie Adamases. I don't really know. But it doesn't look to me like they're going to be able to score a lot of runs. Not that they were going to be that great anyway, but when you take out Corey Dickerson, you take out Steven Souza, you're subtracting about 60 to 65 home runs right there. And so from a fan standpoint, it absolutely sucks. It's terrible. I hate it. I'm questioning whether or not I want to jump on another bandwagon. I don't think I'm going to do that. I think I've kind of came off the ledge a little bit.
Marlins.
But yeah, I'd be like drowning on that bandwagon. So, you know, the other thing is too, you know, they're trying to build a new stadium, and you know, you watch a game at the Trop on a Tuesday night and they're telling you there's 7,500 people there when there's really like 70 people there. I'm really not sure how they're going to try to build a new stadium with this product that they're putting on the field. So I'm really not sure what the direction is here. I mean, I guess you could say it's a complete rebuild. They keep saying they're not going to trade Kiermaier. They're not going to trade Archer. We'll see. I don't know. I don't know why they would keep those guys around if those are the guys that could probably get them the most value instead of getting them their Jermaine Palacioses of the world. So I don't really know what the next move is, but it's going to be an extremely unexciting year of baseball here in Florida.
Yeah, that's an understatement. I think that we will see Chris Archer moved eventually. But Vlad, we can go back to you now. A lot of moving pieces here, but what would you say that your major takeaways are fantasy-wise from all these moves?
Well, I've always sort of been a CJ Cron guy, so I kind of like to see him out of the clutches of Psycho Socia. I do think that he's going to see some at bats this year, you know, and really needs those full time at bats, I think, to really realize that, you know, former first round pick, good pedigree value, just really has never had a consistent opportunity. And so he's hit 16 home runs in three consecutive seasons, like on the dot. Never seeing more than 450 plate appearances. And so, you know, give him the at-bats. Yeah, sure, he's probably going to start out hitting sixth or seventh to start the year. But I think 25 home runs is definitely something within reach against some of this AL East crappy pitching. You know, you got a guy like Carlos Gomez, who I'm personally a little lukewarm on, even in those later rounds. He's going to be one of those guys where, you know, he's going to flash a little bit of that renaissance, a hot 2 weeks. Everyone ends up overspending to pick him up off waivers, and then he hits the DL, and it's going to be like rinse and repeat. This is a guy with a 30% K rate over the last two seasons. He's getting old, hasn't had more than 120 games played since 2014. And I guess my last thought is once in a while, we're going to have to play some Ryan Schimpf in DFS. So get ready for that.
Yeah, definitely. Weird stuff. This just feels bizarre with just what the Rays did, and like Ron attested, it's, you're used to it as a Rays fan and you kind of expect it, but it just feels like weird returns, weird timing, all that stuff. So I don't know. I don't know quite what to think of it. I think the most puzzling thing to me was the DFA of Corey Dickerson. I mean, they aren't spending any money, and that's certainly not going to be the thing that makes them go broke. So if they would have DFA'd him and then immediately traded him, I would have said, okay, well, they had a deal in the works. But it feels like maybe there wasn't a deal in the works, and they just thought, man, we'll see what we can do in these 10 days and figure out what happens. So I think that's the most bizarre part for me. I like Gomez going there. I think he'll be fine for their team. But again, Dickerson, at whatever he was going to make, just doesn't make sense just to just cut him just like that.
I like to move for Steven Souza going out to Arizona. Hopefully it doesn't cut into his playing time at all. But obviously, even with the humidor, moving to Chase Field from the Trop should be a pretty nice bump for him. I think he's a little bit underrated, especially in OBP formats. And so they also signed Jared Dyson. So I guess there is a lot of moving parts in that outfield. But some playing time should free up as soon as AJ Pollock gets hurt in the second week of the season. But that's going to wrap it up for the news, as if there wasn't enough. So let's move into, we're actually previewing our outfielders outside of the top 40. We did the top 40 last week with dear Yancey Eaton. And this week we are moving outside of that. And of course, we start out with our signature segment, ADP Wars.
War has changed. It's no longer about nations, ideologies, or ethnicity.
Instead, it's more about laser show out in Baxton, Pedroia.
I wrote down Mazzara here, and I disagree with myself.
I'm gonna give a slight edge to Eric Hosmer.
Well, you can't make us sound any dumber than we already do. All right, of course, here on ADP Wars, we take two players who are right next to each other in Fantrax.com average draft position, and we decide who we're going to draft between these two guys. And we're going to start off with Michael Conforto versus Delino DeShields. Conforto has an ADP of 202, and Delino has an ADP of 203 right behind him. So, Vlad, we shall throw it to you first. Who are you taking this year, Michael Conforto or Delino DeShields?
Pretty much the easiest question that I have received this fantasy baseball preseason, 100% Delino DeShields, because I, even in limited at bats, he's going to play. Even if he gets platooned, doesn't get to lead off, whatever it may be. Michael Conforto is hurt. They say that he may be ready to go by May. That to me is really scary. And so I've learned the hard way for so long. I mean, this is like, I think 5 years ago with Corey Hart, where I drafted
him. Oh my God, that's the exact one that has stuck with me. That's exactly what I was going to say, Corey Hart.
You know, and they said, oh, he's going to be back at the end of April, and then at the end of May, and then I don't even know what the heck happened. You know, meanwhile,
he missed the whole season, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Missed the whole season, and you're blowing a fifth-round pick. And so, you know, we saw similar with Ian Desmond with the hand injury last year, just never really got his season together. And so, to me, that shoulder injury is a red flag. He is a full avoid for me. Delino DeShields is actually a great target around there. You know, somebody that almost swipes bags in his sleep, somebody who I think can steal 40 bases. And again, really sort of bashing this whole theory that we really need to be mindful of stolen bases this year with power so abundant. I think Delino DeShields is an absolutely great target, and for me, a no-brainer over Conforto.
I completely agree. I didn't even look at DeShields' stats. I saw the two names and I said, I don't want anything to do with Conforto. It's a shoulder injury. I think that's going to sap his power. And even if he does come back and say he's healthy, I don't know that we see full Michael Conforto this year, at the very least. I don't think we see full Michael Conforto for the rest of his career. I think the injury he had is adversely going to affect him horribly for the rest of his career. So I'm going to avoid him until I see back-to-back seasons of sustained success. DeShields is a stolen base guy, and, you know, we're at pick 200, so we're not at a point where this is going to kill your draft if something happens or if he just suddenly reverts back to the 2016 season where he hit 209, 275. So I think he can steal those 30-plus bases with full-time at-bats easily, so definitely a guy to target as far as that goes. And if he hits as well as he did last year, which he batted 269, that's well enough that he's not going to hurt you in any regard as far as batting average or otherwise. So I do like him as a bit of a target as well.
All right, well, I put this matchup on here because I was hoping that somebody could explain the Michael Conforto ATP to me because I sure as hell don't get it, and you guys have failed completely so far. It's definitely Delino. I've always been a Delino DeShields fan, and after he stole 29 bags last year in just 120 games, I'm not coming off that opinion. Of course, he also needed a 358 BABIP, it just 269. But even if you look at his steamer projections, which is notoriously conservative, they give him 10 homers and 32 steals with a 249 average and a 333 OBP. At that ADP, that is glorious. And last year, 35% fly balls, had a 122 BABIP on those fly balls, as opposed to a 377 BABIP on grounders. And 22% of those fly balls were soft hit, which is way too high. So I think it would benefit him quite a bit to actually give up some of those fly balls if he can and just try to honestly be a little bit more of a slap hitter and just get to first base with his elite speed. And I think you could see just a huge on-base percentage from him if he decides to do that. And he also really improved his plate discipline over the course of the season. If you look at it, the first half, he had 8% walks and 28% strikeouts. And the second half, 12% walks and only 21% Ks. 25 years old, still growing as a player. So I think we could continue to see improvement from him. So like I've always said, baby, say Deline yes to Delino.
Ooh, I see what you did there. It's going to be a clean sweep here too. I can't explain Conforto either. The fact that he's just now barely hitting off of a tee is, I think, very concerning at this point. And the thing about, an outfielder too with a shoulder injury, I mean, it's not his shoulder that he throws with, but nonetheless, if he's running down a fly ball, he dives wrong, he runs into a wall, who knows what that could do to that shoulder again and mess it up even further. And just, you know, anything that has to do with throwing, you know, any batting, anything at all athletic related, especially baseball, when it's a shoulder, it throws off more things than you think it does. And they're injuries that take a while to come back from. And if you don't rehab them correctly and get them back all the way, it just nags and nags and nags. And you guys made the point that around pick 200, if you can nab a guy that's projected from all the projections I see to get you between 30 and 40 steals and, you know, 70 to 80 runs too. I think runs is a kind of an underrated category as well. DeShields, as long as he's in the lineup, is going to help you there also. Now, he's not going to get you a lot more as far as homers, average, or RBI, but if you can get a guy around pick 200, you know, can give you 40 steals and potentially 80 runs on the high side, I think that's pretty good value at that point. So Conforto is a guy that I've never really been too high on anyway, but I'm completely out on this year. I want nothing to do with it, mainly because of the shoulder.
All right, don't buy into the hype. Our second matchup then, moving right along, will be a battle of Michaels. We've got Michael Taylor versus Michael Brantley, and both have an ADP of 247. So between these Michaels, Vlad, who are you going to draft?
You know, it's another no-brainer for me, and only I actually ended up drafting Brantley yesterday in that 12-team online championship I did on NFBC in the 20th round, because even with his age, injury history, and whatnot, it's a chance I'm willing to take in the 20th round. This is a guy that's going to be hitting in the middle, likely fifth, you know, moving down a little bit in an incredible lineup. He's a perennial 15-15 guy. He's somebody that is, you know, I mean, how many guys are able to contribute in batting average that late in a draft? On the other end, you got a guy like Michael Taylor who, you know, in a full season in the right situation with 150 games, he's going to get you 20-20 with a 250 average, and that 250 is probably at best. I think his 271 batting average last year was a huge outlier that was driven by a 363 BABIP that's really unsustainable. This is a dude with a 32% strikeout rate. So for me, I'm going to go ahead and take the better hitter, a guy hitting in a lineup in the middle of the lineup as opposed to Taylor, who will have to take another Trey Turner injury to get back to the top of the lineup. So for me, willing to take the shot on Brantley.
Yeah, and you took the words right out of my mouth. The couple points that I wanted to hit on with Taylor were the 363 BABIP and the K percent that's still over 30%. If he'd gotten that down to, say, 25%, I might be slightly more invested in him, but I just can't deal with people who strike out 30% of the time and just don't walk all that much, and he's generally hovering around the 6% mark as far as walks, whereas Brantley, yes, he's been hurt, but when he plays, he's good, no matter what, for the most part. So he had the ankle surgery this offseason. I just read today that he's running. He's doing the things he needs to do. They're ramping up his activities. So far, he looks like he's going to be healthy. Now, you can't quite count on that, but at this point in the draft, that's tremendous upside, particularly, like you said, Vlad, with the batting average. I mean, this is a guy who's going to do it. He's going to do that. He's going to steal. He's going to hit home runs. He's going to do everything, hit in the middle of the lineup. And he's a potential game changer, particularly at this spot in the draft for me. So it's definitely Michael Brantley, in my opinion.
That's a little bit closer for me, just because of Brantley's injury history. And I tend to be a little bit more risk adverse with my hitters, but you guys both touched on the price that you have to pay. It's so low for Brantley that, unless I'm in a really deep league and I'm really worried about, a certain floor, then I might go with Michael Taylor. But in most leagues, I'm going to go with Brantley. You know, with Taylor, you know, how I mentioned with the Shields showing improvement over first half to second half last year, Michael Taylor, his strikeout rate actually got worse over the second half. So I don't really see any sort of breakout looming there. And Brantley's floor, if he's healthy, is really, really high too. And as far as home runs and stolen bases, they're both going to be pretty similar. So most of the time I am going to go with Brantley here.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Brantley as well. And I think Taylor, you know, kind of like has been alluded to before, the 30% K rate, 6% walk rate. I think he's kind of getting very close to the ceiling that he might have. And Brantley hitting in the middle of that lineup, like Vlad said, I think that's huge as far as the number of home runs and stolen bases you're going to get from Brantley. I think they can be pretty similar to what Taylor's going to give you. I know the health's been an issue, but the strikeout rate for Brantley is only at 12%. He's going to give you a 360 OBP. And he, like I said, he's going to give you nearly the same home run and stolen base numbers. You're not going to miss out on a whole lot there. And the other thing with Taylor as well, you've still got Brian Goodwin in the mix there, and you got a guy behind them that's pretty solid in Victor Robles, if you've heard of him at all, one of the top prospects in baseball. And so he's going to be pushing somebody for some playing time at some point, and it could be Michael Taylor, could be Adam, cool nickname off the air, Eaton. Either way, I'm going with Brantley here all day long because I think that the upside as far as the offensive production that you get at pick 247 is way greater with him. And I don't think there's a big enough difference in the counting stats that I'm going to want to go with Taylor over Brantley in any scenario at that point.
Yeah, when we get to the break, you'll have to give Vlad the skinny on, on that nickname, because it is a good one. So our last battle here in the ADP Wars, we've got Lewis Brinson versus Austin Hayes. Brinson has an ADP of 298, Austin Hayes versus 303. So we're getting pretty deep here into the outfield. But Vlad, we'll start with you again here. Lewis Brinson this year or Austin Hayes?
Yeah, I mean, I think that one is a little tougher than our first two options. I think for me, it comes down to playing time, and I think Lewis Brinson is just going to get a whole lot more of it, or at least guaranteed more of it. He's going to get his run in that Marlins lineup. He does offer you stolen bases again, beating down the point of they will be tougher to come by and very important to us. And for me, the concern with Austin Hayes is really, you know, everyone's looking at him. Oh, you know, roster resource has him leading off for the Orioles, and as if that's that's literally what's going to happen. And I don't think anyone knows that. I don't think the O's know that yet. And this is a guy with, who has not played in even AAA. He jumped straight from AA to the majors last year, played 20 games. But, you know, good OBP history, but with a very low walk rate. And I think what hurts the chances even more of something guaranteed early on is the fact that the Orioles also signed a couple of bums, I guess you could say, bums that may get at bats, and Alex Presley and Colby Rasmus. And so, you know, these are guys that you may see in the lineup more often than Hayes earlier on. He is a solid prospect, a former third round pick in the 2016 draft. And so time will come. But I think I would have to lean with Brinson, over Hayes in this one.
I'm going to do kind of a first on the show here, and I'm going to cede my position because I'm actually genuinely curious as to what you guys think, and I don't want to say my part until you guys do. So skip me. So Nate, why don't you go, then Ron, then I'll give my opinion. I'm just that important. I can decide to do this on a whim.
Man, I see ya. You don't even host a show, Van. You had a big ego working with Silver over there and Zimmerman.
That's right.
That is a first for this podcast. Well, I'm going to go with Brinson as well. And it does come down to the playing time. And I just think that Brinson is going to have a little bit more of that security, even though it is on a much lesser team with the Marlins. Don't really know if either guy is going to crack the opening day roster. But like Vlad said, you know, the signing of Colby Rasmus, especially, I think that hurts his opportunity quite a bit. Brinson's debut was really gross, but he does offer more speed than Hayes, and I think that that'll help float his value if he's striking out too much for any kind of grade average. And I do also think that there's a higher chance that Brinson hits higher in the order as opposed to Hayes. So, because the covers are pretty bare down there in Miami. So I'm going to go with Brinson in this one.
Yeah, same deal here. I do like both of these guys, but I just think that the path to playing time is way clearer for Brinson because of lack of warm bodies down there that can swing a bat. About a month ago, Austin Hayes was all over the place as basically having the Orioles right field job. And then all of a sudden, all the depth charts you look at, you know, especially with the signing of Colby Rasmus, for whatever reason, they've switched on MLB.com. They put Joey Rickard in right field, which I'm not quite sure about. But either way, he's been kind of bumped down the depth chart a few knocks. And I think he can still end up winning the job and getting some decent playing time, but I just think the ceiling is a little higher talent wise with Brinson. I definitely don't like the ballpark for Brinson, but I just think that from day one, you know, with him being one of the key pieces they've gotten back, I think they almost don't have a real choice in center field other than to play him from opening day. So even if Brinson struggles a little bit in spring, I still think that they're going to try to go with him out of the gate.
It was good to hear that. I don't understand the Hayes love. I just don't get it. Not one bit. What I do understand is that, yes, in 2017 in the minors, 560 plate appearances, he hit 32 home runs. That's great. This is a kid who can't walk. I mean, he walks between 3-4% of the time. And although it was a small sample of 20 games, 63 plate appearances, his strikeout rate jumped precipitously going to the majors, which tells me that he can't hit good off-speed stuff quite as well as his previous minor league numbers would attest. So we've got a guy who basically relies on batting average and power that I just don't think it's all going to line up in the majors, at least not yet, just because he's very young and we haven't seen the seasoning, and he's got a really long swing. The speed's non-existent, so I don't buy into the Austin Hayes hype yet. I will let someone else pay the premium price that I'm seeing for him, particularly in, say, even a dynasty league or whatever it may be, and I'd rather stick with Brinson. Brinson, I think, has the better overall talent. He can walk. He can steal. I think he's going to get playing time this year, and although it was pretty gross what he did in the majors last year, I think he's eventually got to figure it out. Maybe the batting average isn't there early on, but I think the power and the speed's going to be there early on, so you'll at least get something out of him. And I just plain don't believe in the Austin Hayes hype yet.
He is, but a hater.
That's right. A hazter.
Oh, God. You didn't. All right. On that fantastic note, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with our bargains, busts, and sleepers.
Nasty.
Hey everybody, it's me, Joe Pizzapia. Baseball is back, and so is the Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018 edition. This year, I've got Paul Spohr doing the starting pitching chapter. I've got Jake Seeley doing outfield profiles. I got Sammy Reed doing DFS. We got championships waiting for you. Go get it right now, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018, available on Amazon in paperback and for Kindle and on iTunes, because once you go Black Book, well, you know the rest.
All right, welcome back to the Nasty Cast, and we are here to round out our... Oh, man. We're going to round out our outfield preview here, part two of it. We're going to start off with bargains outside of the top 40. Of course, this is all according to Fantrax.com ADP. And Vlad, we shall give you the honors. What are some bargains that you're looking at deep in the outfield this year?
Oh, man, this is loaded. So if you're talking outfielders after the top 40 in the ADP... I mean, to be honest, like this is where I make my money in high stakes fantasy baseball, because, you know, I'm always trying to do my best job to unearth these late round gems that end up returning at like fourth, fifth round value. And I think there are a few candidates this year. You know, I do think if Michael Brantley is healthy, I do think that he's an option. Mitch Haniger is somebody that is kind of like an unsexy pick. I feel like a lot of those the Seahawks, I was about to call them, Seattle Mariners are. Probably going to hit sixth. I know he got to hit some second last year before he got hurt, but you know, he's a guy I'm looking at steamer projections and other projections, and I think they've got him under projected in the batting average somewhere in the 250s, where I think he could hit 280s with 25 homers and 80 RBIs. So that's another one. And then my favorite guys really is you know, Jose Martinez with the Cardinals, who,
yes,
think, you know I just think I don't see Matt Carpenter making it through the year. I think he's you know, something's going to happen there. I think Jose Martinez is going to get his full time at bats, whether that be first base or in the outfield, where he's not that great at. But, you know, that list I gave you guys, that short list of only guys with over 500, with a 500 plus wOBA against lefties, if you drop it down to 60 at bats or more, Jose Martinez actually leads all lefties. And I know, Nate, you tweeted that one out as well. Jose Martinez, man, he's a beast. I think he's, you know, people forget he's not young. He's actually 29 years old, but I think he's ready for a really good season. Outside of that, some other guys I'm looking at might be somebody like an Aaron Altherr, who I just think the cream will rise at the top, and he's just one of those situations where, yeah, it's a little bit of a crowded outfield in Philly, but I think he, you know, talent will rise, and he'll get his at bats and prove to really out earn his ADP as well.
Yeah, and I think you pretty much covered Nate's top list when you said Mitch Haniger and Jose of the Cardinals. That's pretty much what he had down, I'm sure. On my list, I put a couple of names down that we actually talked about last week because Yancey cheated, and that was Kevin Kiermaier and Aaron Hicks. So I'll skip those two, and I did want to bring up Jesse Winker. I think if he manages to get playing time, which he should, he's as close of a lock to hit 300 with a 370 OBP as there could be, and that's bizarre considering how little he's been in the majors. But I do think his power spike last year's for real, so I think if he gets close to full-time at-bats, he's going to put up quite the season. Randall Grichuk, he's grown on me a bit over the last couple weeks, particularly because he is that prototypical Jays player, and I think he's going to hit for power, and with a little bit of fortune, if he can get that BABIP over 300, he might manage to hit 250, 260, and if he does that, it doesn't sound great, but that's going to be enough to carry the power and everything else that you're going to get with him, and the pick's pretty low there, so you're not going to use too much of a pick for it, for sure.
All right. So yeah, I've managed to get a whole list here. I also just love this group, and right at 41, I've got Bradley Zimmer that I am going to try to draft all over the place this year. Super, super fast. The sprint speed is right behind Buxton and Billy Hamilton. He's got some serious wheels. Could definitely steal 30 bases. I think he can hit 15 homers too.
Fun fact, real quick, by the way, he is one of the tallest players who's as fast as he is. Like, he's like, what, 6'5", 6'6"? He's one of the few people with a run speed of whatever it may be. There's an article out there you can read, but he is one of the fastest tall players in baseball right now.
He could be an Olympic curler.
Could he be? Do you have to be tall for that?
No.
Okay. So it doesn't really correlate to the statement, but we'll
no, not in the least. That's why I said it.
Okay. That whole segment right there was some in-depth analysis. That was some good stuff.
Yeah, basically it amounted to go look at the internet because I don't have the facts in front of me. At least it wasn't a Jesse Blinker joke.
Dude, I forgot I was going to squeeze that in. Jesse Blinker, baby. Jesse Blinker plus. Anyway, yeah, so Bradley Zimmer, it's a little tough to imagine him climbing to the top of the lineup just because they're so stacked, but I don't think he'll hit for a great average either, but there's a lot of potential there that I really like a lot. Delano DeShields, I like him. Willie Calhoun, I like a bit. It's the 49th outfielder. A lot of power, and I think he'll hit for a pretty solid average too. And then Aaron Hicks as well showed huge plate discipline gains last year, and he just missed the breakout because of injury, only played 88 games. But I think he's got the potential to go 15-20 with a huge OBP. Dustin Fowler as the 86th outfielder. It sounds like he's going to push our buddy Rusty Poog for that starting center fielder job. Poog Bell. So I like him. He's got some speed. He's got some power. Keep an eye on Dustin Fowler. And last, I just wanted to mention as I was scrolling this ADP. Hey, guys, Lonnie Chisenhall or Jason Hayward, because they're going back-to-back. As the outfielder, 93 and 94 near pick 400 overall. My God, Jason Hayward.
That's pretty gross.
Yeah, that is kind of gross. It does suck going last because I don't know if I have any guys left that haven't been said.
Nick Marquez, pain.
I'll kind of be a homer here, and to me, when you're looking at these guys too, it depends upon when you get to that point in the draft, what you need more of. Do you need more homers? Do you need more steals? And so, a guy that I'm going to throw out there that could see some decent at bats, he may not have every day at bats, is Malik Smith. So I got to have something positive to look forward to in Tampa. And I had Malik Smith in a couple dynasties back in the day when he was an Atlanta Brave, and I like the steals upside he gives you. And a few times he's gotten some PT with the Rays, he's kind of shown out a little bit, so I'd take him late. I got Grichuk on here. I like him at Rogers Center for some late pop. Dustin Fowler, I think he's got 20-20 upside. He's just got to see how the knees tested out and just win the job. Derek Fisher's a guy, too, that I think could push for some playing time in the corner spots in Houston. And you can kind of see what he could give you. He might push Josh Reddick or Marwin Gonzalez maybe into kind of a super utility role. We'll kind of see how that unfolds. But I think he's a guy, too, that you could watch and get some decent value out of if he's available later on.
All right, that's enough love. Let's go to some busts. So, Vlad, back to you. Who are you avoiding at this in the outfield here?
So, for me, busts, I mean, I think if you're looking at guys, you know, after the 20th round, after, you know, 300 overall, I think it's really hard to be a bust there because it's not a guy that you need to have in your lineup, and you're not paying a lot to get him. So, I'm kind of looking at those guys between, you know, 35 to 50 overall, guys that you're still somewhat paying, you know, a decent price for. And for me, usually I'm going to try to avoid those guys, the big boppers who are going to hurt you in batting average, the guys with 30% strikeout rates. You know, and that might be somebody like Jay Bruce, but I actually kind of do like Bruce this year. For me, Conforto, I think, is an easy bust, you know, but I think that's really for everyone across the board. Eric Thames in Milwaukee and Adam Duvall are another couple of guys where, you know, if things don't go right, you're getting a, you know, 230 average from them. And I think that can really sting. And then finally, somebody like Trey Mancini, Boom Boom, who mashed last season, 24 home runs. You know, when they started playing him full time, just cruising the whole season long, ended up hitting 293. I don't see him anywhere close to that this year. You know, again, fueled by a 352 BABIP, does not do much in terms of taking walks. And so, you know, I'm really careful on guys that are going to hurt me in batting average later on, because I think what a lot of people end up doing is they feel, you know, through their first few rounds, maybe they feel a little light in power. And so they start adding all these guys, you know, give me the Bruce and the Schwarber and the Duvall. And all of a sudden, any work that you've done early in your draft, you know, with batting average is basically negated right off the bat. And so those guys with the bad batting average are really scary and the guys I'm going to avoid.
I'm glad you pointed out Mancini because I don't believe that one bit. Don't trust it at all. So he will not be on a single one of my teams this year, that's for sure. A couple other names I wanted to put out here. I just wanted to pick on the guy, so I went ahead and put him on here as well, and that's Austin Hayes. I don't believe it, so I don't think he's worth taking at the 72 overall spot. But again, kind of like you mentioned, Vlad, this is at the point where if you did take him at that point, it's not really going to hurt you that much, so not too big of a deal. But one I did want to point out is number 80 on our list, and that's Jose Bautista. Why is anybody taking Jose Bautista? I mean, he's done. He doesn't have a team, and when he plays, he's very bad. I don't believe in a rebound at all, so that is just not worth the pick one bit at that point for me.
Yeah, it is hard to call anybody a bust when they're this cheap. But for me, when I'm looking at it, I was looking at these names. It's who at this price point am I still not even interested in, like when they're this cheap? And so there's a couple guys that I found. Avisail Garcia, I wrote about him in my course correction series on Fantrax earlier this year, even at outfield 46. I don't see a lot of upside there, just nothing but regression for him. Conforto also is on my list. Victor Robles is a 61st outfielder. Outfielder, did I say that word right? Anyway,
you said that right, but you messed up 61st.
61st outfielder.
I think you said 61st. Yeah, I've never heard of that before.
The arsonist had oddly shaped feet. So yeah, Robles, I just don't see the playing time there, so I'm not willing to invest even at that price point. And then Yosemite Tomas, his playing time is now buried with the Dyson signing, and now that they have Souza, I just don't think the Diamondbacks have any interest in playing Yosemite Tomas, and I cannot blame them because he is not a good player at baseball.
He is rather bad at the sport of baseball, I will give him that. I'm going to pile on another guy, a couple guys that we talked about already before. I'm going to pile on Conforto. I'm not in on him at all. I'm going to pile on Michael Taylor as well at this point. I'm not in on either one of those guys compared to where you're getting them at. Another guy that I'm going to throw out there as well, and Vlad kind of hit on this kind of prototype of player at this point, and that's Mark Trumbo. Mark Trumbo, a couple seasons ago, gave you some insane power. And it really tailed off last season. He dropped from 47 homers in 2016 all the way down to 23 in 2017 and 65 RBIs. And he only played 13 less games. So needless to say, you're not getting much in average. You're not getting much in OBP from him. So if he's not hitting home runs, he's not doing anything for you. And so he's a guy that at that ADP, I'm definitely not going to touch at all.
All right. Our last segment now. Sleepers outside of the top 120, according to the Fantrax ADP. So really, really, really deep guys here, just total long shots. Vlad, anybody that you're looking at outside the top 120?
Yeah, this is a fun little exercise. It allowed me to sort of dig in, and I've been doing some of these NFBC 50 round drafts, the slow drafts, and so opportunity to figure out some guys that I might like later on. One of those is one of my own from hometown here, Alex Verdugo. One of my favorite prospects on the Dodgers is my favorite, to be honest. Turning 22 in May. It's probably going to take some injuries. Maybe the path is through Jock Peterson stinking again, or Matt Kemp getting traded as he probably should. But this is a second round guy with good plate discipline throughout the minors. Has a little bit of pop. Can add in a few steals. I see him being a contributor to this Dodgers lineup that I just don't. I'm just not a really huge fan of this year. I think we do need another piece on the offense, because I think some of that magic from last year is going to dissipate a little bit offensively this season. And then two other quick guys: Lurie Garcia. He's going way like 130th outfielder. 9 homers, 8 stolen bases in half a season last year. If the Charlie Tilson experiment doesn't work out, or if he's still hurt, it could lead another opportunity for him to lead off, as he did a lot last year. So Lurie Garcia is someone to keep in mind. And finally, just really throwing it out there, Magnaris Sierra, former Cardinal, now with the Marlins. I think anyone with Marlins in a pulse and a pedigree has a chance for playing time. Going to turn 22 next month. If he doesn't make the team out of camp, could get promoted early, see some at bats. He's a lefty hitter. And, he's got some speed. 17 stolen bases in 81 AAA games And then the previous season, 31 steals in single A. You've got guys at third base and in the outfield like Prado and Dietrich, who actually both play third base. And, you know, if something happens to Prado again, Dietrich can move to third, and it gives a path for Sierra for playing time. Just another one of those late round steals guys we can consider.
I love me some Alex Verdugo, and sadly got raped out of him this year in one of my leagues. But we're not going to get into that.
Instead, no, we're not.
We're going to move along, and we're going to talk about Tyler O'Neill of the Cardinals. Currently has no path to playing time, but this is a guy who's ready. And I think with some injuries, some ineffectiveness, maybe they give him a shot. Maybe if he just blows it out of the water in the spring and their hand is forced, they play him, because he's done. He does not need to play in the minors anymore. And he provides what I would consider like kind of a Joey Gallo style approach, but I think his average will be better, and I think the power will be a little bit less. But a guy who can hit for immense power, can walk, and in this day and age of baseball, that's somewhat useful as long as the batting average doesn't kill him. So I really like Tyler O'Neill as a late pick. Verdugo, like you mentioned. Rajai Davis, I just kind of wanted to point out, he just got a minors-only deal with an invite to spring training for Cleveland. And this is a guy who stole 29 bases last year. The average, the OBP, kind of tailed off a bit. But I just firmly believe that he's a guy that's going to find at-bats and steal 30 bases. And if he does that, even if you get hurt in the average OBP departments, there's a way to make that useful and valuable. So just another guy that I'm kind of going to look at. Overall, this past 120 decision we've gone with, I like a lot of these players. There's a lot of guys on here that could make a huge difference. So definitely worth kind of monitoring this group and seeing who rises to the top.
Yeah, and there is, I know, Vlad, you're big on NFBC, but if you're in like the 50 team or 50 round sort of draft and hold format, a lot of these guys, this is where you're going to mine some gold from right here, is if you hit on some of these guys. But of course, I have to ask you, if you take some French dressing and you mix it with some ranch, what do you get? You get French. And I like me some Franchy Cordero, baby, right at 121. Unfortunately, the Hosmer signing really buries him in terms of opportunity, but in addition to the plus speed that he's shown in the minor leagues, a real brief sample last year, but 39% hard contact over 30 games. So that kind of caught my eye there too. So pretty long shot there, but he is a player of interest for me. And then Alex Dickerson too. I like him there again, just about the opportunity. It's weird how the Padres are terrible yet somehow full of roadblocks for these guys that I like. I hate it. But then two other guys that are actually prospects that I think could make a bit of an impact in very different ways this year. Kristen Stewart with the Tigers. Yeah, he's you know, Van, you wrote an interesting piece about the three outcome guys on Fantrax recently, and he's another one of those who could get on base a lot and hit for quite a bit of power if and when he gets called up for the Tigers. And then Roman Quinn is the opposite, polar opposite basically of Kristen Stewart. He's there for speed. He's got a ton of speed. He just has to stay healthy and weasel his way into some potential playing time out there in Philadelphia.
Yeah, so Kristen Stewart was the one guy that I had that no one had said anything about yet, so that pretty much went out the window. So he's probably my favorite one on this list. And I'd like to point out with him too that he's got in the outfield there, he's got to compete with guys like Leonis Martin and Mikey Matuk. So I think he's got just a tiny bit more pop than both of those guys, and I think he could get a call up sooner than later. Had Tyler O'Neill on the list too, and then of course Alex Verdugo as well. I think those guys are especially Verdugo, could end up being one of the best late round outfield outside the 120 gems that you could potentially pick this year. So Kristen Stewart's a guy that I had that probably is at the top of my list that could come in and give some pretty decent pop and doesn't really have a whole lot of roadblocks to the show.
And there we have it. A nice tight episode, gentlemen. Well done. Vlad, thank you so much for joining us. And I have to ask you before we go if there's any story behind your Twitter handle, which is @RotoGut. If that doesn't stick with you, I don't know what will. Yeah. Is there anything behind that? Or
No, not necessarily. I think earlier on, you know, in the early 2000s, where I really started doing well in some of these national contests, I always assumed it was just sort of my gut or my instinct that was helping win. And over the years, my friends have, you know, chided me and basically let me know, dude, it's not just gut. You're actually researching this stuff. So, it's your research, man. But I really do think there's really sort of an element to fantasy baseball where where a lot of it is sort of instinct based. And I think that sort of has boded well for me. So, yeah, that's sort of where the name comes from. But other than that, I just want to thank you guys for having me on. I think you guys are a really sharp group. Probably would hate being in a league with the three of you. And, you know, wish you all the best with the podcast this season.
Oh, thanks so much, man. Is there anything that you have coming out soon that you're working on that you want to plug while you're here?
No, nothing particularly. You know, I've got stuff going on the three sites that I write for, you know, sporadically, but, you know, still some things in the works and some things planning, but, I'll definitely keep everyone informed, up on Twitter.
Who's your team?
I'm the Dodgers, man. That was a heartbreak for me.
Well,
at the end of the year,
go to hell and get off the show.
See ya.
No, I'm kidding. It's fine. I'm an Angels fan. I'm from Anaheim, so I was just curious because there are a couple of you know, double dippers and so forth there.
Yeah, I you know what? I consider the Angels my AL team, and I'll be rooting for them. So I've got no NL on AL, you know, crime here.
Fair enough.
Oh, there we go. They've made up. No more beef on the Nasty Cast. We are beefless vegetarians here. So that'll do it for this week. Next week, we shall be flipping the page to starting pitchers, and we're going to welcome Al Melchior to the show. So until then, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.